Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net has been going on for 40 years now, mostly under the care of Dick, K2RIW, who unfortunately became a silent key 2 years ago. But it continues in his memory, and I hope we do a job that Dick would be proud of. We're here every Sunday night at 8 p.m., and we appreciate people who join us and participate in the conversation and discussion. We try and answer some questions. We try and bring up some interesting topics and discuss them between us all, and all in good humor. No one argues here. We just kind of discuss differences of opinion sometimes in different aspects of technology, but it's all good, clean fun. So let me drop for a second, and I'll give you the usual link. Okay, if you need to reach me, you can't do it via this radio, please use email. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. That would be for mailbag questions, questions that you'd like to ask during the technical net but you can't get on the repeater. Or if you have a comment about some topic, either you want to make a presentation on a topic, a technical topic, of course, or you want to be part of a discussion of a technical topic, or you want to hear other people talk about the topic. Also, we always like puzzles. I try and find interesting technological puzzles for everyone to discuss. So if you have a few buried someplace, share it with me, and if I can turn it into a TechNet puzzle, I will do my best. Also, if you have any questions, if you have anything that Paul might be interested in, if you see some space or NASA-related story and want to get his opinion, you can either contact me and I'll contact Paul, or you can contact Paul directly via his email address, which is spacenetreport@gmail.com. Let me drop for a sec. Okay. There's a link page of all kinds of interesting links. So these are articles that either will be touched upon by Paul, or we can touch upon them if it interests you. But after the TechNet is over and it's just a memory, you could go to the link page and click some of the interesting news stories, read them. I found them interesting. I hope you will as well. The link page is roy.ac2gs.com. Again, you just type into your browser my first name, roy.ac2gs.com. We have a chat room available. If you're interested in our chat room, all you have to do is type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. It's been rather busy the last few weeks. I stream the audio of the Glen Oaks repeater, W2VL. I do it for the TechNet, and because of a guy who likes to listen from afar all week long, I leave it on for the rest of the week. So if you're away from radio distance or you don't have a radio available, but you do have a phone with internet provider or such, you can type into the browser on your phone, technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you a stream, audio stream of Limark's W2VL repeater. And as always, I like to remind people, Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive site. He has amateurradio.tv is his site. It has over 1 million visitors, and he has kept archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So please avail yourself of that. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you my plan for the night. All right. It's going to be a regular night. I'm going to ask for any questions of a technical nature. I would tend to prefer if the first few people, assuming there's more than a few people, who put their name down, have a relatively short question or a comment. The longer comments, I'd like a little bit farther down the list. And once we get over the amateur radio-related questions or comments, we can discuss any other science topic that interests you. I'm game if you are. We can even discuss some aspects of medicine. We do not treat or diagnose over the radio, but if you want to discuss something, that's open for discussion. So with that in mind, I will ask for people to check in for any questions or comments tonight with their first name and their call sign.
Whiskey 2 Bravo Zulu, Rich.
Rich recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
Interaction. I sent you the email about a topic that we spoke last week. That was the controversy about the crystal and Fulton and some properties of it. But I believe that would be in science section. I would prefer that you did talking and I just indicate a field of interest and talk to you.
Okay, Wes, I'll pencil you in for the science section. Anyone else want to be on the list for tonight? Either amateur radio-related questions or comments or topics, or if not, then science-related topics and questions and comments. Give us your first name and your call sign. Okay, we're going to have a quiet beginning. Hopefully it'll liven up as time goes on. So, Rich, W2BZ, what's your question or your comment for tonight?
Roy, what exactly is a vocoder? And, how is it used? And is it used in more than one type of application that you know of, or just ham radio purposes? Go ahead.
Okay, that's an interesting one. A vocoder is a voice encoder decoder. What it does is it compresses the digital stream of voices so that they can fit in normally FCC-allowed bandwidth. A perfect example of where and when a vocoder is being used is in the case of digital voice mode radio. If you were to digitize your voice on an analog-to-digital converter and then feed that audio stream directly into a transmitter, that was able to, usually some kind of phase shift modulation that effectively is able to modulate digital codes, your bandwidth would be enormous and the FCC would shut you down. So what some clever people decided to do is they invented algorithms that will take your voice, dissect it into its base phonemes, and reduce it to a much more simplified digital code and then modulate it so that you're able to get the proper bandwidth. So all three voice digital modes that we are particularly familiar with, and there's many others that most people aren't, but D-Star, DMR, and Fusion all use voice encoder decoders or vocoders. They're made by the same company, Ambi. There are different chips. I think D-Star, being one of the earliest ones, used the 2000 series, and the DMR and Fusion used the newer 3000 series. Now, you know, there are other implementations for that, but mostly that's what they're for. They're for encoding voices and compacting them. They're sort of, if you want to think of it, as MP3 for voice modes only.
Ah, well, that last statement explains it. Now, why don't we use that on single sideband AM or FM?
Well, because we don't modulate digitally on any of those. All that you mentioned, the CW, the single sideband, the FM, the AM, are all analog type of transmission. And so you don't need to compress them. You could theoretically compress them, but there would be nothing to be gained and a lot to be lost because you now have to have a voice decoder chip in order to make any sense of it. So all the old radios would now either need to be retrofitted or thrown away. There have been cases where people have tried to transmit D-Star on the HF band. It, as far as I'm aware, is incredibly unpopular. There is a open source version of a vocoder called FreeDV, which also tried to push it, to promote its use on the HF band, and it never took off. Whereas it's very, very useful. It makes the difference between a voice, a digital voice transmission, possible or impossible on UHF and VHF. No one really on HF seems to be interested in the technology. Again, it has been used before. It can be used in the future. There are radios that are capable of transmitting in digital mode on the HF channels, but I know of no one who does it.
I have music creating software called the DAW, Digital Audio Workstation, and one of them has a vocoder filter that you can apply to any type of signal, a MIDI signal or an audio signal, and I don't know what they're trying to get at with putting a vocoder filter on a signal, but I'll find out what it does. I'm very interested to see what it does. Now that you've explained what a vocoder does a vocoder essentially digitize an analog signal coming into the microphone?
Well, it works in both directions. So it'll take. I don't think it can. It depends on how it's designed. You can theoretically say that a vocoder can have an analog to digital converter, but the ultimate reality of what a vocoder is it will take a digital sampling of your voice. In other words, it will take a digital signal rather than an analog signal and manipulate the data stream algorithmically into something compressible, and then you could run it in the opposite direction and it'll take the compressed digital stream and expand it into a wider one close to your voice, and then you'll run it through a digital to analog converter and a loudspeaker and you get it back. So vocoders tend to operate on digital information, and it's the speech encoding and decoding. My guess is that the vocoder will kind of simulate some voice-like qualities in the digital stream.
Okay, so that's why you get the sort of artificial-sounding audio on the digital modes, I guess. It's all due to the vocoder. And you say there's only one company that makes them?
Yes. As I said, there is an open source. A gentleman for his PhD thesis wrote his own voice encoder decoder. So that's been made available. FreeDV is its name. You can Google it. But for almost every single commercial venture I'm aware of, one company makes something called an AMBE chip, AMBE. There was the 1000 series, I think. There was 2000. Now I think they're up to 3000 series. And they make dual channel vocoders so that they have two vocoder channels. My Open Spot 3 has a dual channel AMBE chip embedded in it. Some manufacturers are able to buy, well, they pay for, they license the algorithms, and they actually put the algorithms in their own chips. But, the company will do that for a lot of money, but individual people, if they want to decode any kind of voice mode, if you have a hotspot and such, you're going to need an AMBE chip. That's usually why you need to have a handy talky radio interface with your hotspot, because that supplies the AMBE chip capability.
that you're over single channel?
With dual channel, you get OpenSpot 3's ability to shift from one type of transmitter to another. So, technology. So, it's because of the dual channel that you're able to pick up a DMR radio and talk to a bunch of D-Star gateways or talk to a bunch of Fusion gateways. Whereas with the usual Raspberry of the PiStars, if you want to talk to DMR with a hotspot, you need a DMR radio. If you want to talk to D-Star, you need a D-Star handy talkie or a D-Star radio, and Fusion requires a Fusion. If you have two channels, you're able to encode, decode, and you can do all kinds of cute tricks.
I see. So it's still doing the same voice encoding and decoding, but it's just doing it twice or in parallel, correct?
Yeah, it's just doing a little bit extra, but it's the same process. It's voice encoding, decoding. Without that algorithm, you would be left with somewhat encrypted data streams that would not make sense to anyone.
Roy, if you can hear me over that, thanks for your answer.
Yeah, unfortunately, I wasn't able to hear the question. That kind of overwhelmed your signal, unfortunately.
No, Roy, it's not a question. I just said thanks. I get it now. For that. That's all for now. Thanks, Roy.
Okay, very good. Fortunately, someone's kind of playing with their push-to-talk button. So, you'd think that they'd find better ways to use their time. I mean, you hear if things have quieted down. Okay, very good. Don't know what this is about. But nevertheless, once again, I'm AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Long Talk Technical Net. So, if you got a question or a topic, or a cop, then please feel free to give me your first name and your call sign.
WS2.
Yes, Paul.
Did you see the article? Well, there's one little topic about this guy who wrote a song. He's a hammer, and he wrote a song, and you could go to the YouTube that plays it, and it's really quite good. And it was in the May issue of, you know, this year, of course, you know, in the upfront section. It was this guy, Alan Chan, W2BUZ. I don't know if you saw that, but I was going to send you the, you know, they have the YouTube, URL written there, but to try to copy that is a pain in the neck. Maybe I could send it to your website, and then if anybody wants to do it, it's easier just to copy and paste it. Back to you.
Okay, I don't remember seeing it. I didn't fully read it. I was just kind of thumbing through and finding stuff interesting. If you could send me a copy, email, I'll put it up as a link.
Yeah, I'll do it. This guy's he's pretty talented. It's a pretty good song. It's called Back on the Air. Okay, I'll send it to you.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Paul. Again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Limark Technical Net. So if you have any questions or topics for discussion or comments of a technical nature, please feel free. Give me your first name and your call sign.
It looks like we're going to have a science section sooner.
Yes, I would tend to agree with you. I guess the people are doing other things, or they're not in a curious mood tonight. We'll try one more time. If there's anyone out there who has any amateur radio-related questions or topics or comments or want to tell people something, I have a little thing to tell people. More recently, as I mentioned earlier, the FCC was going to implement a payment system for new exams and renewals and such. Anything other than upgrades from one class to another was going to require a payment effective April 19th. And apparently they started to play with the software and something broke. And the FCC database for entering new license holders was completely disabled. It came back online, I think, yesterday at midnight. So it's back online. There's a few days of delay that's going to be built into it because, you know, there's a back of entries. But if anyone was concerned, the FCC was able to get their computer system back running, and it can now record licenses. So everyone who took their exams and passed in the last 3-4 days, it was kind of got stuck someplace, it's finally unstuck. So that's my little comment. If anyone else has any comments, questions, or statements, please give me your first name and your call sign.
AD2DU, Alex. AD2DU.
Yes, hello, Alex, and congratulations on your new extra license. What can I do you for today?
Can you explain wires? Do I need to have a choke on every single wire in my house? Like, what level do I have to be installing these things and where?
AD2DU. Okay, Alex. No, I mean, there are people who have done that, but it's probably gilding the lily. There are definitely places where you should put chokes. Right off of antenna feed lines, it's always a good idea to put, unless you have a valve in there, to put a cheap balun. That's a kind of a loop of a coaxial cable. It's its own inductor, so it adds impedance and blocks common mode reflections coming into your shack. Or there's another type of inexpensive RF choke / pseudo balun, which is a row of ferrites that you just put one after the other and then put some heat shrink tubing to weatherproof them, and that should be close to your antenna site. Then it's more of a matter of fixing stuff once you get things working. If you notice interference, if you notice that you're getting a lot of RF in the shack, you might want to add some RF chokes to your coax cable before it enters your shack. If you notice your microphone is being reported as having distortion, you might need to put a RF choke on your microphone input. Sometimes USB connectors for radios don't have a choke. Sometimes they're built in, thankfully, but if they're not, if you have belt and suspenders, it might be a good idea to get a lot of inexpensive chokes and choke your USB connector from your transceiver so that none of the RF goes into it, around it. But yeah, it tends to be more of a safety feature after the fact. Only if you're really, really cautious and someone gave you an enormous supply of ferrite that can choke, are you going to choke every single wire that goes in and out of any kind of radio equipment.
KD2HYK, first name Bob.
I hear you, Bob. Unfortunately, someone's just kind of getting busy with the push to talk button.
Yeah, Roger, I hear that. I'll go there and cut his antenna if you want.
Well, although that would probably make me a happy man, it kind of goes against the grain of the hobby. I don't know if this guy is in a hobby or just his friend gave him a radio or what his sad story is. I'm sure it's rather sad.
Your signal is your signal is over the noises. I have some minus two.
For 6 years, ever since I got into ham radio, and the one side of it is not receiving. I'm looking to find schematics for this particular unit. Can you help me out?
Okay, I just want to tell Alex that I haven't forgotten him. I'm going to try and get back to you, Alex, in a moment. Bob, what model radio are you interested in getting the schematic such?
Well, no, you do. Go back to the other gentleman that you were talking to, and I can hold on. No problem. 82HYK.
Okay, Bob. Back to you, Alex. I'm sorry that there's someone out there who, you know, has had a bad week, I guess. Anyway, were you able to receive what I was telling you about RF?
I was able. It came across well. It was very helpful information. So I'm just going to buy the big pack of cheap ton of chokes on Amazon and clip them on some stuff that surrounds the radios and see if it improves anything. AD2DU.
Okay, I mean, basically the point of the exercise is you're trying to dampen common mode getting into your electronic equipment. You're in a perfect shack. Your transmitter is feeding a shielded RF signal through your coax cable. It's not radiating. It's not absorbing any local RF fields. It's going straight up to your antenna. And once it's in your antenna, theoretically, all that energy is radiated out and away far from your shack. The problem is that RF can kind of bleed through places. Also, RF can get reflected back from the antenna, and your coax cable can become a radiating device called common mode current. And it could flood your shack with RF radio waves that kind of get into your computers and get into your gadgets and gizmos, reset USB devices and all kinds of not-so-great stuff. Or, as I mentioned before, it can get into the microphone amplification circuit and distort your audio. So, again, if you got enough of them and you want to try, so be it. But otherwise, just keep in mind, if there's something that's going haywire when you transmit, you know, seek out the wire, look at it, and see whether or not you can choke it. And a cute little trick is if your choke is a little bit on the big side and it has a large inner diameter, you can loop it a second time and effectively double the effectiveness of the RF choker. If you understand what I'm saying, it's just the cord. Instead of just running the cord through the opening in the middle of the ferrite choke, if there's enough room and you can loop it one time, you basically double the impedance and double the amount of RF choking for a given ferrite choke. Did you get that last transmission, Alex?
I did. You're coming across clear. No, that's very helpful info. The Yeah, it sounds like you may buy, rather than slip-on choke, you may buy the little wheel ferrite magnet thing. 82DU.
Okay, when we're talking ferrite, we're not talking the magnetic type. We're talking ferrite that's kind of a soft magnet, so it doesn't hold the magnetic charge, if you will. You want those as opposed to the ones that do hold magnetic charge because, you know, they produce heat, hysteresis, and other interesting things. I tend to like the clamps. You can buy the toroids and roll them around the toroids, but what I do is I get a collection of rather hefty clamp-on ferrites with about a half-inch inner diameter. So with something that wide, I can clamp a coax cable, which is approximately 0.4 inches, but I can also loop most other wire cables at least twice and increase the amount of choking that's going on. Yeah, Rich?
Hey, you're talking about choking off the common mode, is that correct?
Yes. Choking off, yeah, any kind of RF, stray RF that's being picked up on a cable.
So in that antenna design we were discussing last week, the guy who designed it was actually using common mode to his advantage, right? Rather than something to be avoided.
Yes, and that was to me the most fascinating aspect of the design. You usually don't want to see common mode currents on your transmission lines. They tend to be problems that need to be solved, but in that rare design case, he actually took that weakness and made it a strength. So yeah, that was what I found fascinating, that almost always you do not want common mode currents on your transmission lines, but in that one single antenna design, that's when you need it. Otherwise, you wouldn't have the other leg of your virtual dipole.
I wonder if anybody else out there has thought about that design over the past week and has any comments. Can you think of any other applications where common mode can be used to an advantage?
No, I can't. I mean, theoretically, I guess you could use the same principle for a quarter wave ground plane, but it would probably be a mess. This is probably the only case where you can actually even conceive of doing something like this, at least in my imagination. But you bring up a good point. If there's anyone out there who's fiddled around with that antenna design that was mentioned last in the May edition of QST, pages, I believe, 30 to 33. If any of you took a look at it and had any ideas or actually tried out any of the design features, please hit that push-to-talk button and share.
I have to say, you know, taking one single length of coax and turning it into a dipole is quite intriguing. That's why I really wanted to understand it. I think I got it now, especially with the application of the common mode.
Yeah. I think it's a clever trick. I would like to hear people try it and come back and tell us what they found. I would really be interested. Mike was going to try and model it using some antenna simulation software. I'd love to take a look at the results of that. So it's rather clever. The only problem that I have is that it could be rather fragile. You know, the guy tried to keep it as lightweight as possible, and I understand that. I'd be interested to know at least how sturdy configuration that's based on an RG58 coax cable would be under the circumstances. Hopefully in a couple of months when people get to look at it and write letters back to the editor, I'll be able to find out in QST if anyone has had any luck with the design. But I'm hoping that someone more local tries it out and tells us how it works for them.
Yeah, especially since half of it is just the center conductor of the coax, and RG58 doesn't have a very thick center conductor. You're right, it could be pretty fragile up there, especially, you know, in the winter months and when it could break more easily. But we'll see. I don't get QSP, so if you could report back if there's been any feedback in QSP, I think we'd all be pretty interested.
Yeah, I'll surely do that. You know, I mean, for the next few months, I'll check the letter to the editors and see. I don't think their turnaround is very fast, so I wouldn't expect to see it in you know, by June or probably even July. Unfortunately, my best guess is it's going to be any place it'll be in August. Okay, so Alex, I hope I gave you some information to think about. Again, you know, it's always a good idea to have some ferrite chokes, clamps and such. I would tend to go on the well-known vendor type of category because there are different ferrite mixes. Some mixes are better for some purposes than others. So, you know, if you just kind of went to eBay and bought a unknown mix brand, it might be useful, it might be useless. So, you know, try and, you know, I mean, sometimes I just buy them at the DX Engineering. I sort of rely on their quality. It's a little bit more expensive that way, but there are a lot of other companies that also sell ferrite clamps. I tend to buy the more oversized ones, again, because I can double loop them and increase their ability to impede RF common mode current. But I hope you learned a couple of things, and you'll apply them, and you'll tell us how it all worked out for you.
No, thank you. I have a lot better direction now. I think I got a good base footing there. AD2DU.
Okay, very good, Alex. So we're on to you, Bob, KD2HYK. Do you have a radio? You would like to get a copy of its, documentation. What model radio are you looking for documentation?
Okay, Roy, it's a TYT 9800. Quad band.
Okay. I was kind of hoping that it would be some kind of older model that was made in either the United States or Japan. TYT is one of those interesting things built in China. I do not know if you are going to find what you want. I always kind of tell people Google is your friend, so you certainly should Google. You might find someone who opened one up and took it apart and documented it. But usually Chinese radios, you don't get a lot of documentation. Sometimes you don't even get an instruction book.
Yeah, the instruction book I have when I bought it, 6 years ago. There was a gentleman on YouTube. He's from Germany. He has one, and it doesn't. I don't know where he got the schematics for it, but he has them on his computer. And I'm trying to find out myself, but the one side of the radio doesn't receive, but it will transmit.
Okay. Well, not all stages are common in the transmit and receive, so there's probably some defect in the. In the receive series of stages, how much did that radio set you back? I kind of get the idea that it's roughly about $200.
Yeah, correct. It came as a package deal. The radio and the mobile antenna came with it to match it. It's a quad band antenna, and I've been using it ever since. And the radio works really good until. I would say about 2 weeks ago, I was listening to it, and it made a funny noise on one side, and all of a sudden the audio went dead. But I could transmit with it on that side, but there's no audio. On the other side of the radio, it works fine.
Okay, I'll throw it out to the audience. If the audience has any knowledge about the TYT-9800, if there's any place for a service manual, I wouldn't bet my anything on that. But if anyone knows about a service manual for a TYT-9800, I think it's a TH-9800 is its full model name.
Okay, I would appreciate it. And, I'm glad I found this guy who can talk, TechNet, because, I'm not a real good, electrician, radio guy, but, I'm basically self-taught, and, I have a lot of equipment I can test stuff with, so, I want to see if I can try it out.
I got a couple of, I'm in the car, WHSCDO, I got a couple of questions.
Sure, question away, Andy.
Unfortunately, like Roy just said, it's a Chinese radio. I haven't worked on any of those, but since I'm not familiar with the radio, one question is, since you say it's not receiving, is there an S meter or a bar graph which shows you if it's receiving and you just don't have any audio coming out of the speaker? Or is it not receiving at all? You don't have any indication that it's receiving when a signal comes in. That's a question. Thinking that maybe it's just an audio issue, but it is receiving, you're just not hearing it. Roy, back to you, and that's a question.
Good, Andy. So, Bob, any comment? Also, do you need the schematic? Would you like the schematic? Because I found the schematic. That's about all that I found.
Yeah, okay. Question number one by that gentleman. You're right. The bars come up to receive, but I don't not hear anything out of the speaker itself. Like I said, I can transmit with it, but on the receive side, the bars come up high, and I can't listen to anything.
Can I make another comment?
Sure, Andy.
Okay, good thing I asked that question. So it sounds like it is receiving, and there may be a simpler problem with the audio amplifier. Or, I'm not sure how the audio amplifier is designed, but sometimes they use a coupling capacitor, an electrolytic, between the speaker and the output of the audio IC, if that's what it's using. Again, I'm not familiar with the radio, but given what you said, it might be simpler, and since Roy's on the schematic now, it might be easier than you think.
Does the radio have any squelch adjustment?
Yes, radio does have squelch adjustment, and I tried it back and forth, and it doesn't work. It works on the other side of the radio, it works fine, but not on this side. But as I think what that other gentleman said, when it was making that, I couldn't hear anything before it even went dead, I heard some kind of popping noise and a crackling, then it just went dead.
Yeah, that was a good question also regarding squelch. Or maybe it's a PLD code. Sounds like it could be just a simple audio amp issue, and maybe if you got test equipment, you could troubleshoot that. And you could with the schematic figure out which circuit is the audio, and go from there.
Yeah, right. I can just get the schematic on it because I don't want to take it, open it up and just look at it and go, duh. What do I start now? But I'm pretty good with looking at schematic and stuff. So but that will help me out and would be appreciated.
Comment.
Yes, Wesley. Comment away.
There were hundreds of pieces of equipment that I have. I was always willing to fix something. And Keshita W2B John, who is no longer with us, said once, a very smart thing, life is too short. with the price that we pay for some stuff, yes, you have fun, yes, you can do it. Life is too short for just fixing things. If it's a small thing, yes. But a few hundred dollars, it's sometimes good just to get another radio. And to exchange.
Well, I mean, that is a correct point, Wesley. And I kind of was thinking that when I saw that its price is $200. You know, it depends upon how much time, how much patience you have, and the inclination to accomplish something. So, you know, if you have the time and you really want to feel that you fix something, you know, Bob might as well try. Now, Bob, I would have sent you it by right now, except that I looked you up on QRZ and you don't have an email address. So if you send me your email address, I'll send you the attached file of the schematic.
I'll give you my email address right now over the radio. No big deal for me.
Okay.
Okay. And my email is maint62@aol.com. Again, maint62@aol.com.
Okay. Very good, Bob. Next time someone's talking a little bit longer, I'll have the time to type away, and I'll send you the schematic.
I have a question to Andy.
Thanks, gentlemen, for the information, and now I know what frequencies is to come on to learn anything. So I want to do my 7.3s now. I got to take some medicine. So I catch you all maybe later on whenever you guys are on, and 82 ways before I say we're clear, 7.3, everybody.
Okay, Bob, very good. As I said at the beginning of the net, we're here every Sunday night from 8 o'clock to 11. And you're always welcome.
And to explain, I have a question to Andy.
I'm here. Go ahead.
Andy, the last time I was using speech processor, because I'm using 5 watts, but directional antenna. You said that I was over compressed, so I adjusted. Is it better now?
Yeah, you sound perfect. Everything's good.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you, Dr. Roy.
Okay, very good. Once again, I'll throw it out to the audience if anyone has any amateur radio-related questions or comments or topics, please hit that push to talk and give me your first name and your call sign.
Hello, boy, W2BZ.
Yes, Rich.
My name on the list again, but this is for a car question that some people might know the answer to.
You have an automobile question?
Correct, but later in the
net. Okay, we'll put you down after Wesley for a car question. Anyone else with any questions or comments of amateur radio technology related or technology in general for later on?
Yeah, this is Raymond at WW2RG.
Yes, Raymond, what can I do you for?
Well, I've been playing around with the FT8 mode quite a bit lately, and I got a question basically about the message structure. Most of the messages I'm seeing has the CQ, the call sign, the grid number, and on some of them will have, following after that, either say USA or CQ Zone 20. Are they trying to tailor or you narrow their CQ messages only to those areas?
Well, that's interesting. I played around with it about a year ago. I haven't lately. I would assume, yeah, that they're just trying to advertise for some of the lazier people of where they are. And, you know, if you're looking for that type of a person, it's easier than to look at the other fields. But, you know, it seems to be a wee bit redundant. But, you know, it's the FT8 is a very fascinating digital mode. It's from Joe Taylor, who has a Nobel Prize, and a guy called Frank, I think. So Frank and Taylor is the FT, and they have FT4 and FT8. Very popular, and a lot of people use it. One time there was a guy in the chat room who was using it while he was listening to the TechNet. So I think it's more of just an identifier to kind of wave a person looking for that type of a location or contest or what have you, contact, if that's what he's doing.
All right, thank you very much. That's what I also thought. Have a good night, guys. 73.
Okay, very good, Raymond. Anyone else with any questions or comments for tonight? Okay, I guess not. So I guess we will move to the general science category. I'm waiting for my email to Bob to clear, so hopefully in a little while Bob will receive the schematics that he was interested in. Let's just try one last time. Anyone out there who has any questions or topics of amateur radio related technology or general technology, give me your give me your first name and your call sign. Is that you, Chris?
No, Sam. AB2NFK.
Okay, very good, Sam. I think you might have doubled with someone else. Was there someone else who also made a transmission?
KB2NCZ, Max.
Okay, Max recognized. Okay, Sam, I guess I heard you first, and then Max will come after you. What's your question or comment tonight, Sam?
Yeah, good evening, Roy. You're doing a beautiful job. Listen, also, fact check, Mike, there is no sideband on that radio. And originally, I was going to get it, right? And then I saw for another $100, I could get the Yay 2, which is the same radio. The Yay 2 came out with it first. And that's a powerful kickoff. But, you know, a lookalike. Like I was talking to you before, I have no sideband. So when I go on 10 meters or 6 meters, I can't get anywhere. So he has that also on his radio, or the quad radio. So just let him know, but he might go on 10 meters and don't hit anybody at all.
Okay, thank you very much, Sam. I think Bob went clear. I gathered that he doesn't mind that. It sounds like he was more than happy to use it the way it's designed, that he wasn't planning to use any single sideband on 10 meters, and he just wants to see if he can tweak the audio back in the receiver section. But I thank you for adding that information. Yeah, I mean, you always should kind of double-check on the specifications of any radios you plan on purchase and make sure of the modes and whether or not that negatively impacts on your decision to buy it or not.
Yep, correct, Roy. I didn't tell him not to buy it. I don't put a lot of money into it to repair it. Just to let him know that, you know, some people would like to go on 10 meters, you know, get people from around the world, stuff like that.
All right, thank you, Roy. Well, thank you, Sam. That takes us to Max. What's your question or comment for tonight?
Hi, Max here, KB2NCC. Thanks for picking me up, Roy. Question I have is, I am putting up a hex beam for HF. I'm grounding the coax with a search protector. I'm grounding the mast into ground with the 8-foot ground rod. What I want you to know is how necessary is it to ground somehow the rotator cable?
Oh,
Okay. I don't know. Personally, I don't think it's you know, I mean, if you are a belt, suspenders, and staple type of a guy, you ground everything. Theoretically, an absolutist would sort of say ground everything. I don't think that would be a major concern unless you're putting it up real high and there's a lot of flat land around you and your location is very, very commonly struck by lightning. Because your reflector is your rotator rather is going to be braced to the base. Isn't your base going to be grounded also? So I mean, I think it's a little excessive, personally.
Yes. The mast. Well, the rotator is definitely attached to the mast. The mast is grounded, but again, you get the purists with say everything has to be grounded. And I've seen like grounds for eight conductor grounds for rotor cable, which are pretty costly. I was under the impression that it's really not. I'm sticking with two rotors. I have two used rotors here. One has a ground strut, it's a CDE control box, which does have a ground lug on the back of it. The other is the ASU 450, which doesn't have a ground on the controller.
Okay. If you were mounting it on a 200-foot tower, and it was someplace that was a haven for a lightning bolt, and you wanted to be extra special, careful, I guess. But I don't know. Unless you're in a location that I can't imagine, I think personally it would be rather. It would be belt, suspenders, staple, and screws and nails. I'm curious if anyone else out there has any opinions one way or the other of grounding everything, including the cable that comes out of the rotator. I figure that if you ground the rotator, it should be sufficient, unless I'm missing something in the risk categories. But if anyone has any other opinions, please feel free.
Thank you for your advice, Roy.
Okay, good luck with everything, Max. And please come back and ask another question or participate in an answer or just kind of hang out, whatever works out for you. But thanks for participating tonight, Max.
It was my pleasure. I actually got a swap and shop. I am looking for up to 100 feet of rotor cable. I don't know if anybody that's listening tonight is in possession of some that wants to sell. Six or and or eight conductor. I'm not sure which I want to use. But again, I'm good on my email is on QRZ, KB2MTD. Thank you.
Okay, very good, Max. The people out there, if you have extra rotator cable that you don't need that you want to sell, think of Max.
WHCDL, there's a lot on eBay. And just for the record, I've never seen shielded rotor cable, whether it be four conductor, six, or eight conductor. I've never seen shielded rotor cable, ever. So... I wouldn't even know how you would ground that in the first place.
Well, what I think they're doing is cutting the cable, whether it be six or eight, and they have a discharge unit with that amount of screws on it with some kind of discharge dissipators in between, and you attach the wires from one side going in and one side going out. But again, they're over $100.
Yeah, surge protector is a possibility. Lightning arrestor, that's more for coax. But I've never seen it. Okay. I'm sure it's out there.
WP2EAB.
Yes, Ed.
Keep in mind, a direct lightning hit will destroy almost anything. What you're looking for...